Hello and welcome to the APAC File, a joint bi-weekly podcast of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty and the Wilson Center focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Tension between the U.S. and Iran is creating waves beyond the respective capitals and borders. As the escalation continues to grow just across the border, Pakistani leaders are closely watching the development with much concern. The question is, how does the U.S.-Iran tension looks like from Islamabad? And what are the potential cause of this escalation to Pakistan-Iran relations? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Fatemeh Aman, Senior Non-Resident Fellow at the South Asia Center of the Atlantic Council, Alex Watanka, Senior Fellow at the Middle Eastern Institute, Dawood Khatak, Senior Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Pakistan Service Radio Mashal, and Michael Kugelman, Senior Fellow and the Deputy Director of the Wilson Center South Asia Program. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Okay, let's start with you, Dawood. It's unclear at this stage where things are headed in U.S.-Iran tension, but things have never been as tense as today for a long time. So when you look into this from Islamabad, what do you see happening and where things are headed?
Looking at the Pakistan's relations with Saudi Arabia and Iran, I think this is a very delicate line for the Pakistani diplomats and for all the Pakistani governments, because keeping a balance in the ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran, it's a very difficult situation. Right now, when I'm following the statements from the Pakistani official and the Pakistani foreign ministry, so there are quite a few statements where the Pakistanis are saying that they are not going to become partner in any adventure against the Iranian government. At one point, the Pakistani foreign ministry said that they don't want a kind of escalation in the situation, or like a kind of they are pointing to the U.S. action. So I believe that the Pakistani authorities are quite cautiously responding to the developing situation in this region.
Yeah, when they look into this, like a news coming out of Washington about the possible deployment of thousands of soldiers to Gulf region, for example, what they see happening? I mean, how they interpret this?
Well, if we look at the Pakistani media, so from time to time, we are watching in the Urdu TV channels and they are presenting the situation like a kind of escalation. But when we are looking at the Pakistani officials, like the Pakistani foreign ministry and the Pakistani government in Islamabad, I don't see any big activity on part of the Pakistani authorities, and there is a sort of silence with the exception of only a few or only one or two statements from the Pakistani Foreign Office in their usual weekly press briefing. I think there is nothing much that is coming out like something extraordinary, that the Pakistan is really panicked or the Pakistan,
okay,
Pakistani authorities are really preparing themselves for a developing situation in the region.
Okay, let me take, Michael, your point in this. Other than the policy statements that Dawood has just mentioned about the position of Pakistan, the kind of developments that I mentioned, like about the potential mobilization of forces and the increasing rhetoric by the United States against Iran, and increasing sanction, and U.S. urging other partners to follow the path. Aside from policy statements, what do you think Islamabad is seeing happening in the Gulf region?
I would actually commend the way in which Pakistan has handled this U.S. confrontation to this point. You know, it's true that the public messaging has been very cautious, very careful. It's true that all we've heard was a brief statement at the foreign ministry that basically called on the U.S. to lower the pressure. You know, Pakistan has to be very careful here. I think it's very clear to most of our listeners that Pakistan, you could argue, is perhaps uniquely vulnerable in this U.S.-Iran confrontation, yeah, because of Pakistan has a very important relationship with both the United States and Saudi Arabia, Iran's two rivals, and Pakistan has a very significant population of Shias, which, according to some estimates, is as many as 30 million people, which would be the largest Shia population outside of Iran. And, of course, Iran borders Pakistan. So there's a lot at stake here for Pakistan. And I think that with Saudi Arabia having recently provided a new gift to Pakistan of about $3 billion of economic support, that gives the Saudis more leverage to try to apply the pressure on the Pakistanis even more, to try to side with the Saudis and by extension the United States in this U.S.-Iran confrontation. So yeah. I don't really know of anything public that the Pakistanis have been doing here. They clearly want to assert their neutrality. To this point, at least, they've done a good job of suggesting that they are going to remain neutral. But of course, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe others would want to weigh in on that.
Yeah, and as I said, the discussion about the war also is not as tense as a couple of days ago when we were planning this discussion. But if there were to be a war, what would this mean to Pakistan and its ties with Iran?
Well, I mean, obviously, it would be the worst case scenario. It would put Pakistan in an extremely difficult position where it would be under tremendous pressure to try to come out side with the Saudis. But Pakistan clearly has no interest, no support for any type of U.S. Military action in Iran, because it would have so many destabilizing consequences and it would be so damaging to Pakistani interests, as well as the interests of so many other countries in the region, including those that are close to the United States, like India and Israel, for that matter. But I think that your first point was important. I think it would be unlikely that it gets to that point. President Trump actually said that he would be willing to look to the idea of negotiations with Iran, as if he was trying to upbraid John Bolton for suggesting that the U.S. was going to be on some type of war path. So I do think that a military confrontation with Iran is a worst-case scenario that will most likely not come to fruition, but one never knows.
Fatima, a couple of days ago you had a story on the Atlantic Council, very intriguing story. We will get to the content of that, but before that, when we talk about Pakistan is a kind of interesting country. There is no united position, especially when it comes to the United States. Religious parties would be saying something else and perhaps against anything that U.S. does. And then political parties are talking from a different tone depending on which political party you are talking about. So looking into Pakistan, what do you see? Is there any dominating opinion in terms of where they see Pakistan's position is?
Inside Pakistan, obviously, there are groups, parties who have, tend more towards Saudis or also have some sympathies for Iran. But, Pakistan has managed through all these years with different governments and different parties in power to keep this neutrality toward Iran's ongoing tension with the United States and also with these Arab neighboring states. So I don't see any active participation of Pakistan should Iran and United States come to a visible physical confrontation, military action. As Michael said, I think it's going to be very, very hard for them, obviously, but they will keep their calm and they would try to mediate between the parties, and which, for actually, to their credit, they have done some good work. And Zarif is going to Pakistan this week, 2 days before the meeting of the Organization of Islamic States. And I think they are trying to just get some support from Pakistan, be it the mediation efforts, or also, maybe we'll come later to this discussion, but also getting closer to China and this triangle of China, Pakistan, Iran, that they hope would also, scare away a full-scale military confrontation.
Fatima, I understand when you say they, you mean Pakistani authorities. Is it what you mean?
I used several times they, but the last one I was talking about the Iranian authorities, if that was in relation to Zarif's trip to Pakistan, which is coming, I think it's tomorrow or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Alex, when you look into Pakistan from Iran, what do you see happening in the context of this escalation in the Gulf?
Well, let me just point out on the point of escalation in the Gulf, and I think we all seem to be in agreement on that key point. What we're witnessing here is a war of words from the United States and Iran engaging in this sort of unusually heightened level of brinkmanship, but that's what it is. It's brinkmanship. We're not really on the verge of a military conflict between the U.S. and Iran. I think everyone recognizes that, and not just in Washington and Tehran, but also in the neighborhood, in the broader Middle East, including in Islamabad. So I think if I'm Iran, I'm looking at Pakistan, I am probably expecting the Pakistanis to continue play the game they have played for the last 40 years, which is to balance the interests that they have overall. Key issue for them is obviously their relations posturing and ability to be able to stand up to the Indians. That, I think, will be overriding issue for the Pakistanis. So in a worst-case scenario, if you do have a broader conflict in the Middle East, and let's not kid ourselves, if there is war between U.S. and Iran that gets out of hand and becomes a full-fledged military conflict, and I, by the way, I should repeat this again, I don't think we're even close to that point, right. But that's a worst-case scenario.
Yes.
If that happened, then from a Pakistani point of view, that means the Islamic world would be even in further turmoil than it has been. And Pakistan historically does not like to see that because it weakens its hand. It always looks to the Islamic world for support vis-a-vis India. So I think broadly speaking, that's on the geopolitical level. On a more practical level, should there be war, what I suspect will happen is the Pakistanis will continue just to sort of balance their interests. They would worry, to Michael's point, about a large Shia minority in Pakistan, many of whom might want to decide to fight on Iran's side against the United States. We don't know. I mean, there's been certainly a trickle of Shia Pakistanis going to fight under the Iranian leadership in Syria and Iraq in recent years. So if there is a war between U.S. and Iran, I am sure there'll be Pakistani Shia volunteers going to fight for Iran. And that will be a concern for Pakistan, but I don't think that's going to be one that they can control. So overall, my estimation is Iran doesn't expect any major changes in Pakistan's posturing. Pakistan will remain, above all, concerned about its relations with the Gulf states. At the same time, Pakistan will not do any fighting for the Saudis or anybody else against Iran. I think what we can expect is a similar situation we had in the 1980s during the Iran-Iraq war. Pakistan was pressed for years by the Gulf states, by the United States, to side with Iraq. The Pakistanis refused. They did that relatively successfully throughout that war. And I think something similar like that probably is what we can expect should there be, unlikely as it is, should there be a new war in between Iran and the United States.
Yeah. Looking into Pakistan, Michael, from Washington, what the Americans are talking to Pakistanis, I mean, yeah, Pakistan is taking this neutral position. Is it in line with what Washington wants from them to take?
Well, you know, I think the nature of the U.S.-Pakistan relationship now is such that I don't imagine there's that much thinking and focusing on the part of the U.S. government on how Pakistan should deal with this confrontation with Iran. I mean, as you know, and as we've discussed on this broadcast many times before, you know, the main focus for the United States when it comes to Pakistan is how it can help in Afghanistan, and particularly with these ongoing talks with the Taliban. I think that's where the focus lies. I mean, certainly you could talk about the Saudis and how much they may be trying to get the Pakistanis to take their side, as they've done on many other occasions before. But with the Americans, it's a bit different. I mean, the U.S.-Pakistan relationship is much different than the Pakistan-Saudi Arabia relationship. It's much less deep. It's much less extensive. It's very limited, very narrowly focused on the Afghanistan story right now.
Dawood, we mentioned this a couple of times about the Saudi angle in this. And we know Pakistan and Saudi Arabia has a long-standing traditional relationship, and Saudi Arabia being an active partner in this escalation. What do you hear from Islamabad about what Saudis are talking to Pakistani authorities, and how much Pakistanis are receptive or vulnerable to any messaging coming out of Riyadh to Islamabad?
Well, if we talk about this particular situation, recent Iran and American tensions, so I would say that in this context, right now, there is no very open messages from the Saudis or very open statements from the Pakistanis. But obviously, when it comes to Saudi-Iran tensions, so the Saudis would always want Pakistanis to be on their side. And I think when it comes to with us or against us from the Saudi side, so Pakistan will have no option but to stand on the Saudi side. But when I look at the history of this fighting and wars in the region, like particularly the post 9/11 situation, so I think Pakistan has got its lesson by involving itself too much in the Afghan war, although it brought a lot of like financial and military benefits for the Pakistani army, but and also for Pakistan. But I think now the public pressure on the Pakistani government and the Pakistani military is too much, although in the very early stage, but there are movements, there are civil society is now raising up against wars, against involving in wars. So whatever is happening in the region, whether the Saudis are pressuring or not pressuring, I think the Pakistani authorities will take care of the people's sentiments in Pakistan. And even if the Saudis are forcing the Pakistanis to become partner in this war, if the war happens, I think Pakistani policymakers will be thinking twice or three times before joining any such adventure. But like before going into this discussion, the very basic question that I have in mind, if Americans are involving themselves in any kind of war in the region, like against Iran, I don't think that they are going to be landing their troops on the Iranian soil, because they did it in Afghanistan and now almost in its 19th and 20th year. So I think that is not going to happen in that case. Yeah. And when that is not happen, I think there is no question of Pakistan participating in anything.
Thank you. Let's not contribute more than we already did into this war-related discussion. So keeping the war scenarios aside, the fact that U.S.-Iran tension is rising and it has already expanded to so many fronts, what is this doing to Pakistan, and especially in terms of economy, in terms of social issues, in terms of people-to-people contacts, and what Pakistan is doing about it? We will continue the AFPAC file talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. Today, I'm joined by Fatima Aman, a senior non-resident fellow at the South Asia Center of the Atlantic Council, Alex Watanka, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute, Daoud Khatak, senior editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty's Pakistan Service Radio Mashal, Michael Kugelman, senior fellow and the deputy director of the Wilson Center South Asia Program. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia, and we are discussing the implications of rising U.S.-Iran tension on Pakistan's relations with Iran. Welcome back. Okay, though we are living at the times when everything is possible, but let's talk about this tension beyond war terms. There's already a lot happening. Sanctions were reintroduced, at least by the United States, and Washington is urging its other partners to follow the path to push Iran into isolation. So things are already bad as they are. So what the tension in the level that it exists between U.S. In Iran are doing to Pakistan's relations with Iran? I mean, what kind of implications are they having on Pakistan-Iran relations in terms of day-to-day routine relations, on economy, social issues, people-to-people contact, or cross-border trade, etc.?
I mean, I'm obviously speculating, but that's what we're all doing here today. We're talking about continuing sanctions on Iran. There are a couple of scenarios that, you know, right away you have to sort of take on board and take somewhat seriously. One is, and I think Fatima Aman earlier mentioned Zarif's upcoming trip to Pakistan, which is, again, one to watch out for. In the event of these sanctions becoming the new normal, Iran would have to look for ways to break the back of these sanctions. Now, Iran has a number of important land borders, and Pakistan is one of those neighboring states that could perhaps become a conduit for some trade. Again, I want to go back to the Iran-Iraq war. During that conflict, Pakistan played a significant role, becoming a transshipment point for trade between Iran and the rest of the world. So maybe practical calculations like that are taking place in Tehran in terms of what role Pakistan can do quietly on a smaller scale, but help Iran in this short term as it's going through these painful sanctions, how Pakistan can help Iran. And a worst case scenario in terms of a spillover, should you have a full out conflict, it's not just the Shias of Pakistan that might find themselves angered by what's happening in Iran and might decide to pick up arms on behalf of Iran inside Iran, or worse even, perhaps decide to attack U.S. interests in Pakistan. Again, these are worst-case scenarios, but for us to think about. And should Iran, Mohammed, should Iran implode as a country? And that's a scenario when you have a full-fledged war. Iran is a multi-ethnic society. Yeah. There are Kurds, there are Baluchs, and so on. Mm. The question for the Pakistanis is, if you end up with a separatist region in southeast of Iran called Baluchistan, what does that do for Pakistan's own Baluch insurgency. Mm. Mm-hmm. These are real issues that Pakistan has to take into account. Mm. And let's not forget, Pakistan is a very young modern country, and there are real ethnic, religious, sectarian divisions in Pakistan. If I'm sitting in Islamabad, I see no interest why I want to fuel some of these existing tensions by getting myself dragged into a basically a foreign policy adventure that U.S. and Iran both are guilty right now in engaging against each other.
Yeah, you know, we come back again, the discussion about the war, but my intention was to talk about a little bit this economic or other implications. Certainly, there is a communication line between Washington and Islamabad. So as the United States is pushing forward with sanctions in its efforts to isolate Iran, for instance, what kind of communications are happening between Washington and in Islamabad? Michael, do you have any insight what they are talking about, what Washington is asking, especially the fact that Imran Khan was there when United States was trying to push Iran into isolation, and Imran Khan was talking about economic partnership and pledges for the future partnership and all these things?
I'm not privy to exactly what the U.S. government is trying to do with Pakistan when it comes to the Iran issue, though I go back to what I said before, that I don't really think it's a priority. And I also think at the end of the day, there's a realization.
Mike, I think it must be a priority, the fact that the Pakistan sits next to a country that you are trying to isolate. And with the visit to Iran, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan, in a way, engaged in something that's in contradiction to what Washington is trying to do.
Well, no, I mean, obviously Iran is a priority for the U.S., for sure, for the wrong reasons. But my point, go back to what I said before, is that I don't think the U.S. sees its relationship with Pakistan as broad enough that it would actually have as a front burner priority this idea of trying to work with Pakistan to further turn away from Iran and align itself more closely with Saudi Arabia. At the end of the day, I think the U.S. recognizes what really is accurate, that when push comes to shove, you know, Pakistan is much closer. It does lean toward the Saudis. I think that's very clear, given the very extensive relationship that it has with Saudi Arabia that includes military cooperation and all. So I think that the U.S. doesn't worry that Pakistan would be a problem in this regard. The other thing is that, so far as I understand it, Pakistan has been very good about it's responding to U.S. sanctions on Iran. I mean, I do believe that Pakistan, like India, has reduced its energy relationship or its energy imports significantly. And you know, I think this is a bad thing, the fact that you've had for many years negotiations between Iran and Pakistan, and at one point India, to build this gas pipeline, which I think would be a huge boon for Pakistani energy security. But the Pakistanis have not done it. They have not built their portion. Part of the reason is that they don't really have the financing for it. But I do think that they have deferred to U.S. wishes not to get involved with that. So here, this is another example why the U.S.'s tougher line on Iran works against Pakistani interests, because it puts it in a position where it can't really trade with a key energy partner like Iran. And Pakistan is heavily, heavily dependent on energy. Foreign hydrocarbons to serve its energy security. So. Bottom line, I don't think the U.S. sees Pakistan as a big problem here when it comes to how it regards Iran and Saudi Arabia. Yes, you know, Imran made a trip to Iran. It was just a trip to Iran. Where did Imran Khan make his first foreign trip as prime minister? He went to Saudi Arabia, as I recall. And I think that gives a better indication of where the Pakistanis do stand privately, even if publicly they do genuinely want to have a neutral position when it comes to the Iran-Saudi Arabia dispute.
No doubt. But then why Imran Khan even went to Iran? I mean, what was the reason behind that, and especially at this time?
Well, for the same reason that he articulated some strikingly positive comments about Iran when he was on the campaign trail. I think that Iran, more than previous Pakistani leaders, although I would defer to Alex and others on this, I think he really wants to demonstrate true neutrality in the sense that, yes, Pakistan will remain very close to Saudi Arabia, but he wants to make a better effort to show that Pakistan does care about Iran, does have an interest in a trade partnership, which may be difficult with U.S. sanctions, and does have an interest in reaching out to its key neighbor.
Okay, Fatima, I promised you to get back to your article, the content of your article, the one you wrote for the Atlantic Council. And you talk
Which one do you mean?
The one in which you talk about this triangle. You are saying that Pakistan is not in good terms with U.S., China is clearly not happy, and Iran naturally fits in this triangle. So do you think Pakistan would consider defying U.S. in order to improve its ties with Iran?
You know, let me just say that. Maybe it sounds simplistic, but Pakistan has masterfully used Iran as a leverage, in bargaining with the U.S. and with its Arab allies. So for years, look at this peace pipeline. There have been numerous trips from the Pakistani presidents and Pakistani prime ministers to Iran since they started with the peace pipeline. And they encouraged Iranian. They did everything. They just, completed their portion of that pipeline. And in return for not continuing the project, they also received more help from the U.S., more help from their Saudis, from their, Arab friends. So I don't expect Pakistan to do anything for, to advance Iran, but they have stayed neutral, and I think they would still do that. But it's very good in, for their image, for Imran Khan's, that if he would play, he would just look like he's trying to mediate between Muslim brothers countries, like Iran and Saudi Arabia. I think we could still see some more, gestures coming from Islamabad. But Imran Khan is in trouble himself because of all those economic troubles that you guys mentioned, and with IMF yesterday devaluating rupiah. So, and he has been under attack, since the devaluation. So I think we shouldn't expect too much from Pakistan's help. But politically, it was very significant, I believe, Khan's travel to Iran, even though it was after his trip to Saudi and some other countries. But, the fact that he went to Mashhad, the fact that he took his Shia ministers with him, and also it wasn't direct admission that Pakistan has been promoting terrorism when he said, when he mentioned that Pakistani territory has been used by terrorist groups. But I think politically it was both good for him and also for strengthening Iran's position when it looked that the country is completely isolated. And yes, you mentioned with China, I think that's Iran's very few hopes that, a closer tie with China and Pakistan at the same time, because for that, the necessity is that China would stay in at odds with the United States. That would provide Iran with a window of opportunity, to not be completely isolated in terms of economic things.
Okay, Dawood says that he's back. Dawood, you are back?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
yes.
Good to have you back. Okay, Dawood, just one more very quick point. Talking about this U.S.'s efforts to isolate Iran, do you see any implications of that other than a couple of politicians talking about this? Is there any actual on the ground street level implications of this U.S.-Iran tension in Pakistan?
Well, right now, when we are looking at the public, as the public see all this situation, so I don't see any bigger tension in this situation. But I think if there is something or something happens to between Iran and U.S. relations, so obviously there is a very bigger Shia population in this region, and I think they are the best sympathizers of the Iranian regime. So, and they are scattered all over Pakistan, mostly in Punjab province. Then if you move to the tribal area, so you will find a lot of Shia population in Koram tribal agency and the adjacent Pakistani district, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, and I think in Balochistan also. So I think there will be a kind of protest demonstrations, and then in the bureaucracy, they are pretty strong, so you will find some sort of, but I think if the Pakistani government or the Pakistani policymakers decide to take sides with the U.S. in this tension, so I think then the bigger populations are the Sunnis, and there will be a kind of conflict. But I would again say, as I said earlier, that Pakistan had its lessons from Afghan war, and I don't think that the government will take any active part in this tension.
Right.
Or any active siding in this tension.
Okay. Michael, of course, we are approaching toward end of our discussion. So in this situation in which Imran Khan remains kind of neutral in having relationship with all the parties at the same time, what do you think, how long he can continue this?
Well, he is under increasing pressure, to be sure, just because, as I think you mentioned earlier, the U.S.-Iran relationship is at one of its most serious points in quite some time. So that'll make it difficult for Pakistan. And then there's also the fact that the Saudis just keep getting themselves more leverage. You know, it was not too long ago when Riyadh signed off on this $3 billion aid package to Pakistan. So that's going to put it in a position, I would think, where it would want to try to pressure the Pakistanis more. I mean, it's amazing what you see with this messaging coming from Saudi Arabia, the Saudi press. It's really on overdrive, demonizing Iran and talking about how going to war is the right thing. It's really quite unsettling. And I think that suggests that, you know, the Saudis are really going to go full speed ahead to try to get one of their closest allies, if not their closest ally, to side with them. So that will make things very, very difficult for the Pakistanis. And set aside Imran Khan, I mean, the military, of course, is the one that makes these decisions. And the military does not want to be embroiled. The last thing it wants is to be embroiled in some type of, or caught up in the middle of some type of conflict. But the military has a pretty deep relationship with the Saudis. You look at Raheel Sharif, former military leader, who's very close to the Saudis. So I think it's going to be increasingly difficult. As much as Imran would want to maintain that neutrality, there could be unprecedented pressure on the Pakistanis to formally side with the Saudi camp.
Okay,
in this Muhammad, if we believe for a very short time that Imran Khan will stop taking any kind of U-turns and Imran Khan will become a very powerful prime minister, like if we believe this for a while, so then I think that Imran Khan was the first person who asked for neutrality between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Yeah, he did. He did indeed. Okay, so in this situation, Fatima, you earlier mentioned Zarif is going to Pakistan. What he has in mind?
I think he will. It's just a feeling. I don't have many facts to support that. But I think Iran in a triangle that I mentioned with China and Pakistan. I think he will try to convince Pakistan, you know, to get more active. And or as Michael mentioned, Pakistan is not a big concern for the U.S. right now. But I think for Iran, Pakistan plays a very major role at this point. Just, you know, for even the moral support would be really significant. And in regard to Pakistan military, as both Michael and Dawood mentioned, even though the military is more, you know, they have more sympathy for Saudis. But remember that back then, Imran Khan was opposing, you know, General Sharif even being the head of that coalition. And it would argue against Pakistan's intervention to Yemen. And I think there is really no justification for, and no, I can't see any support for a Pakistani involvement in a possible military confrontation between Saudis and or the United States. But just one sentence I would like to mention, you know, both our guest mentioned Shia population of Pakistan. I do believe that Pakistani Shias, even though there are some sympathies toward Iran, but remember, they are not proxies of Iran, you know, as Pakistan is not proxies of Saudi Arabia. I mean, Pakistani Shia have also have their own differences with the, you know, the system of in Iran. And it goes back to a long time ago when Pakistani Shia were followers of another, a more moderate Ayatollah in Iran, Ayatollah Shariat Madari, and the more radicals were supporting Ayatollah Khomeini. So, I mean, we should not see the fact that Pakistani Shia participated in Syria conflict, you know, encouraged by Iran, does not translate into Pakistani Shia getting actively involved in a confrontation between, in a possible confrontation between Iran and United States.
Wow. It was a really nuanced discussion. Unfortunately, Michael, we are not going to be able to touch the other element that you mentioned, the Afghan front in this. We are kind of over time, but very last point, very brief point. So in this situation, what are the things that we should keep our eyes on in terms of Iran-Pakistan triangle?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, a war may be averted. As we've all discussed, I think a war between the U.S. and Iran is unlikely. But the hostility and the tensions in that relationship will remain in place. So that means that Pakistan is going to continue to have this difficulty of how to align itself, given these tensions that have been longstanding and will continue, even if there's not a war. So it's not like Pakistan will be off the hook if if they walk back from the brink and if Trump agrees to have negotiations with Iran, the U.S.-Iran relationship is going to continue to be bad. I mean, when Barack Obama signed that nuclear deal with Iran, that was really an anomaly for U.S. policy. The normal thing, what always happens and will continue to happen, is a very troubled relationship. And Pakistan and other countries will have to grapple with that.
Right. So what Fatima Dawood, what you guys will be looking at and going forward in this triangle, United States, Iran, Pakistan, perhaps Saudi Arabia?
Well, for me, to be in quite few words, I think when it comes to this triangle, Saudi, Pakistan, Iran, and then the U.S. is also there. So, well, I think Saudi is more closer to Pakistan, and in any situation, Pakistan will side with Saudi Arabia, not Iran. I don't think that for Saudi Arabia, Pakistan will go to war. As for the Shia population is concerned, as Fatima mentioned, Shia population may have their sympathies with the Iranian regime, but I don't think that they will be going to fight in Iran in case of any war. For the Shia population, again, if they comes on the street, I think if the Pakistani military once decides that they are going to take sides with Iran and America, so then they know how to silence population and we such kind of protest. And we have the examples of Afghanistan war, because there were a lot of Taliban supporters when Pervez Musharraf sided with the U.S. against the Taliban, and there were Taliban supporters. One last comment, Pakistan is already in trouble. So, and that is financially, and that is its like international image, its relation with European countries, its relation with America. So if Pakistan can use this tension as a bargain chip with the United States to improve its relation, I believe that Pakistan will do that, but that doesn't mean that Pakistan will go to war for the United States. Yeah. And last, very last, I think it is more important, this tension in the region is more important for China than Pakistan, because it's China whose projects in Balochistan region, that $62 billion, that's going to be affected by this tension.
Okay, Fatima, so just a future-looking kind of perspective, what you will be looking at going forward.
I believe Iran is looking for windows of opportunities for mediation to resolve the conflict in as much as it's possible. Oman's foreign minister went to Iran yesterday, I think, Ben Alavi. And remember, Oman played a very important role in the nuclear deal in 2015, you know, bringing Iran and United States and other partners together for this deal. He's traveling to Iran, and we could look for, some upcoming efforts by Oman and even Pakistan. I mean, it sounds a little strange, but I think Iran is, if they prefer, obviously, that it doesn't come to any military confrontation, they are looking for mediation, I think they would just move Pakistan and Oman, or they would use any offer in this regard. But for the worst case scenario, if there is no mediation between all these parties, I think they would continue focusing on this triangle that I mentioned with China and Pakistan.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much, Fatima Aman, Senior Non-Resident Fellow at the South Asia Center of the Atlantic Council. Also, big thanks goes to Alex Vutenka, Senior Fellow at the Middle East Institute, and Daoud Khatak, Senior Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties Pakistan Service, Radio Mashal, Michael Kugelman, Senior Fellow, and the Deputy Director of the Wilson Center South Asia Program. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the FPAC File, a joint podcast of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty in the Wilson Center. Please join us in the next discussion in 2 weeks. Until then, bye-bye.